Spring is here, but people who spend their time outdoors may have already noticed an early visitor, the black-legged tick. Dr. Holly Ahern, a microbiologist at SUNY Adirondack and co-founder of the Lyme Action Network, explains that the mild winter may have had an effect on tick populations and possibly led to an increased risk of tick-borne disease.
We had a very unique situation this year we had warm weather and we also had no snow. Because one of the things that allows tick survival, that enables tick survival, is a nice big snow cover, because that actually insulates the ticks from the fall into the spring. So the ticks will be waiting literally under the leaves, protected by the snow. So we didn't have any snow this year. So that means that they were exposed more to the elements. But on the flip side of that, the elements were not that bad. The weather was warmer, the temperatures were warmer, and you probably already know that ticks are active pretty much above freezing, when the temperature is above freezing, and we had a lot of days where the temperature was above freezing. And I know there were people who had ticks on them over the winter because they brought them to me to see what they were. And I know that I keep getting emails and messages and calls from people who are finding ticks on themselves now, and what do I do with the tick, and can we have it tested? But what we're finding now is that the adult ticks that had wintered over are active, so people are bringing in adult ticks, but people are also finding nymph stage ticks on them, which is, so usually it's late April, May, and they're emerging much sooner this year.
Because the nymph ticks are already out, I understand that those have the greater risk of being undetected and then therefore transmitting disease. Is that correct?
That's the presumption. Whether or not that is true, I don't know, because the research is pretty incomplete on that. It is certainly better known that the nymph ticks are associated with Lyme disease and others, but the adult ticks transmit those diseases too, and in fact, the adult ticks carry more things. So a bite from an adult tick is more likely to give you more than one infection. So the nymphs are just those that were better associated with Lyme disease way back in the beginning, and that knowledge hasn't really morphed much since that time.
Can you tell me about some of the symptoms of Lyme disease? I know there's a lot of different ins and outs, and it's not very well understood, but what are some of the concrete symptoms that really point to Lyme disease?
Okay, so if you are bitten by a nymph stage tick, the symptom that seems to be most commonly recognized is something called an erythema migrans rash or bullseye rash. But I want to make it perfectly clear. The research only shows that nymph ticks leave that rash behind. That means if you're bitten by an adult tick, you shouldn't be looking for a rash. You might not have any kind of rash at all. And in fact, that I know that is true, because my daughter was bitten by an adult tick and never developed any rash at the site, and yet came down with Lyme disease. So, and then, you know, if you're bitten by an nymph stage tick, you might also have an acute reaction. You might have fever, you might have body aches, you know, very similar to what the flu would feel like. But that manifestation is really not the most common type of Lyme disease. So what's more common is that you do not remember being bitten by a tick, or you were bitten by a tick and pulled it off and thought, well, I didn't get the disease, because there's also the misconception that if you remove it before it's been there for 36 hours, you won't get Lyme disease, and that is a misconception. But what happens then? You may or may not actually have any symptoms. You may not have a rash, you may not have a fever, you may not feel sick right away, or you may start to experience muscle aches or joint pain or swelling, especially in the knees with kids. This happened with kids. In fact, that was how Lyme disease was first recognized. You may end up with neurological symptoms, what people like to call brain fog or overwhelming fatigue, not like, geez, I'm tired, more like, I'm exhausted, I can't get out of bed. Not being able to think straight, not being able to literally find your way from one place to another that you've been doing for lots of time. Those neurological symptoms are not very well understood, but they are a clear manifestation of Lyme disease. And what I think everybody really should know is that the science is very clear on this, that when you are diagnosed with Lyme disease and treated for Lyme disease with a month of antibiotics, which is the standard treatment, well, actually 10 days is the standard treatment, sometimes that people will extend it longer, one out of three people will not recover fully from that treatment. And so the big question is what to do about that, because infectious disease docs tend to believe that they've killed the infection and what's happening after is something else. It has nothing to do with the Lyme disease, it's something else. But one in three patients experience this. So it's not a coincidence. It is far more statistically significant than what people think. And so I just want to make that clear that if the symptoms don't go away, other manifestations can occur later.
So basically what you're saying is that there's still a lot we don't know, and that the symptoms can vary and how it reacts to treatment can vary, and that's why more research is needed.
That's exactly what I'm saying, and at the moment what what's stopping that is the fact that instead of saying we have a problem and we need to address it, the approach is there is no problem, we've got it, the science is settled, we understand this perfectly, this is just a stupid little bacterial infection, we know how to deal with those, and that prevents any kind of forward motion on research. And that attitude is what we're trying to do, change. We need to change that attitude. And by attitude, I'm talking about this is the attitude of the CDC. This is the attitude of the NIH. These are our taxpayer-funded organizations that are supposed to be working for us and not stopping progress.
And so we're sitting here in the microbiology lab, and there's a poster behind you that says the politics behind chronic Lyme disease. And I know that you've been a big advocate for federal legislation to address this. It was included in the 21st Century Cures Act, which was part of the omnibus spending bill last year, but from what I understand, that got separated out. Where are we on federal Lyme disease legislation?
So all of that happened last year. The bill passed, the large bill passed, with the small bill, the Lyme disease part of it in it, and then it went to the Senate. The Senate rewrote most of it, and parts of it are still making its way through the Senate. The Lyme disease part of it is still in committee. And so what we're trying very hard to do is to get it out of committee and into the larger bill, which once that bill, there's assurances that that larger bill will pass. But if the Lyme piece of it isn't in the larger bill, then we're done. So we are working very hard to try to convince senators on the HELP committee that this is worthy of moving on and being included in the larger omnibus bill. The bill is S-1503, and people can call, write, text, whatever it takes their senators to say this is important and it needs to be included in the bill. All it does is, first of all, it's a zero balance. It does not cost any money. It will not add to the budget burden at all. All it does is mandate the creation of a group of scientists, public, non-public, with advocates, Lyme-treating doctors, patients, so that the patient side of this perspective can be included in the larger picture of Lyme disease for the first time. Because the CDC is really not acting in the best interest of the public, and they're following guidelines that are not necessarily the best. And new information, the new science, needs to be included in that kind of algebra when it's created. So,
and part of that would be bringing in research and stakeholders from all over the country, including SUNY Adirondack.
Yep, that's correct. Hopefully we will have a role in that, Lyme Action Network and SUNY Adirondack, and you know, other SUNY colleges, and also, you know, the broader that group can be, the more voices, the more perspective there can be, the more likely we're going to actually have an honest review of all of the scientific evidence, of which there's lots of scientific evidence that Lyme disease is not just a simple bacterial disease easily treated with antibiotics. Is far more complicated than that. But that voice has not been, we have not been allowed to say that out loud, and we would be able to with this legislation.
If somebody is concerned about Lyme disease or they do discover a tick, how can they contact someone to get that tick tested for Lyme disease?
Well, I have some really good news about that, because the Bay Area Lyme Foundation, which is actually based in Southern California, Stanford University, has funded a research initiative through Northern Arizona University where you can send the ticks to Northern Arizona University and have them tested for pathogens for free, because they're collecting data and they want ticks from all over the country. So if you go to their website, bayarealyme.org, They will, and actually just put in tick testing, it will come right up to a page. It's a PDF file, so you can download that PDF file, fill out the information, put the tick in a baggie, and then send it to them. And once they receive it within 5 days, they'll let you know. They test it for Borrelia, they test it for Babesia, and I think they do Ehrlichia or Anaplasma, which are microbes around here that we are at risk of getting those diseases. So that's for free. It does take 5 days to get the results. There are also paid places, such as UMass Amherst has a lab where they will do the testing for $50, but the turnaround time is 24 hours. So you can know if the tick you were bitten by carries any of those microorganisms, and then the question is, were the microorganisms the tick has transmitted to you during that tick bite? And that, you know, that is not going to answer that question, but at least you can take that information to your physician. You know, if you have you were bitten by a tick with three things, you might take that to your physician and say, look, I don't want to risk getting this disease. Could I please go on a prophylactic antibiotic?
Is it only the deer ticks in this area that are known to carry Lyme disease?
Right now, yes, the deer ticks, which are actually black-legged ticks. I don't like calling them deer ticks because, number one, that's not really their name, and number two, it blames the deer for the circumstance when it's not the deer at all. It's actually the small mice. So it's the ground mammals that are the bigger issue here. So the black-legged ticks are, at this moment, the ones that transmit Lyme disease and the other co-infections in our area.